Now note again that the NTS was part of the World Anti-Communist Conference for Freedom and Liberation. It worked for a time with the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations, about which we shall have more to say later. And note again that, as we shall return to later, the NTS, as well as the ABN, was apparently in touch with the John Birch Society and General Walker. Note also that Ilya Mamontov was an engineer with the Sun Oil Company, owned by the Pugh family. They were major funders of the far right and one of their top political advisors, not mentioned in this particular section of the Dallas Conspiracy, but one of their major political operatives was a fellow named Hans Senholz, S-E-N-N-H-O-L-T-Z. Senholz had been a Luftwaffe interrogator during the Second World War. Interrogator or interrogator is usually a euphemism in the intelligence community for torturer. By the way, later, Senholz went to work for Western Goals. Note also that Jack Crichton, who contacted Mamontov to act as Marina's interpreter along with Peter Gregory, was, again, a petroleum engineer and had worked for de Gaulle and Macnaughton. He also was in the Army Reserve Intelligence Service. And note also that he was a trustee of Empire Trust with the aforementioned Lewis Macnaughton. And Lewis Macnaughton of de Gaulle and Macnaughton, again, the employer of George Bouet and Declan Ford, two of the other white Russian Galen-related people who were instrumental in trafficking the Oswalds around in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and thereby played an important role in helping to frame Lee Harvey Oswald for the assassination. And again, bear in mind that George de Morenshield, who was also close, by the way, to the family of Jackie Kennedy, the Bouviers. In fact, when he was testifying for the Warren Commission, after he finished, he would go and have dinner with Jackie's mother. Bear in mind that de Morenshield was also deeply involved, and de Morenshield and an associate of George Bush, deeply involved with corroborating Marina's bogus story that Lee Harvey Oswald had fired at General Edwin Walker. Next, we're going to turn to a very, very important connection, and this concerns the operational and ideological fusing of these Galen-related elements that I have been speaking about with, and bear in mind that this intelligence petroleum Galen milieu involved George de Morenshield, George Bush, I should say. Bush may or may not have been involved in the actual assassination of John Kennedy, certainly deeply involved in the milieu, and quite obviously involved as director of Central Intelligence with frustrating investigations into the Kennedy assassination. But what we're going to be looking at now is one of the most important things to understand about the assassination of John Kennedy. It is important to study this particular event in order to understand the nature of the forces which performed this event, which killed Kennedy, literally staged a successful coup in the United States, so that we can understand the political nature of the forces which are ranged against us today and which have dominated the world in the years since 11-22-63. What we're going to be looking at now is how this petroleum intelligence national security milieu, which obviously involved some of the Galen-related elements discussed already, how this hooked up with elements of the American far right, specifically John Birch Society-related elements and the very influential Hunt family of Texas. H.L. Hunt was the scion of that particular family. His sons, in particular Nelson Bunker Hunt and Lamar Hunt, are very much on the scene today. Nelson Bunker Hunt we're going to talk about at considerable length this evening. It should be underscored here that there has never been any hard information linking the Hunt family with the assassination itself, but their names certainly crop up in numerous places during the course of the investigation into the assassination. It would not surprise me, and indeed it is suspected by many, that they were involved with the assassination itself. Otherwise, I want to underscore there has never been any proof of that. Turning once again to government documents and the assassination of and the JFK assassination by Peter Dale Scott, we find, from their public stance and behavior, one would hardly expect H.L. Hunt or his sons Nelson and Lamar to be allied with any official CIA operation. For years, they have typified the kind of Texas independent oil operators who have complained about the policies of Washington, the major oil companies, and the CIA. More specifically, Nelson Bunker Hunt was one of the John Birch Society sponsors of the black-bordered, anti-Kennedy ad in the Dallas Morning News on November 22nd, an ad which, at a sponsor's insistence, attacked the CIA in an obvious reference to the coup against Ngo Dinh Diem for, quote, arranging coups and having staunch anti-communist allies of the U.S. bloodily exterminated, unquote. Ngo Dinh Diem was the former president of the former South Vietnam. He was assassinated on November 2nd, 1963. His name is spelled capital N-G-O, small D-I-N-H, capital D-I-E-M. Continuing. In this respect, it may be relevant that Madam New NHU had traveled to the United States with the nephew of a right-wing Texas oil man, Dudley Dougherty, D-O-U-G-H-E-R-T-Y, and that on coming to Dallas, she appeared at the October 23rd U.S. Day rally, attended by Oswald, and addressed by H.L. Hunt's protege, General Walker. But just as the CIA itself was bitterly divided over the question of Diem and Vietnam, so some CIA veterans and other elements within the U.S. intelligence community had close links to the Hunt, Walker, Minuteman coterie described by Treasury Agent Ellsworth, E-L-L-S-W-O-R-T-H. One of these persons was Mamontov's friend, Jack Alston Crichton of Army Intelligence Reserve, who served as a trustee of the H.L. Hunt Foundation. Crichton was also a member of the American Friends of the Katanga Freedom Fighters, a group organized by China lobbyist Marvin Liebman, L-I-E-B-M-A-N, to oppose U.S. CIA policies in the Congo. Now, by the way, that was because they felt they were too lenient. So note again, Jack Alston Crichton, that intersects with the same petroleum intelligence Galen milieu, he is a trustee of the H.L. Hunt Foundation. We're now going to take a look at, before I continue with this particular section of government documents in the JFK assassination, we're going to take a look now at the context in which the names of both H.L. Hunt and Lamar Hunt and Nelson Bunker Hunt crop up in connection with the investigation into the assassination of President Kennedy. We're going to read now from a book called The Assassination of JFK, By Coincidence or Conspiracy. It is produced by the Committee to Investigate Assassinations under the direction of Bernard Fensterwald, Jr. This was published in softcover by Zebra Books, copyrighted 1977. By the way, I would note that many people, including myself, suspect that Bernard Fensterwald himself was involved with the CIA. There are key omissions from this book. It's an excellent book and a necessary book, but there are key and seemingly inexplicable omissions. I would also note that Bernard Fensterwald became the attorney for Watergate burglar James McCord after his arrest. Generally, intelligence veterans use attorneys connected to the intelligence community when they are on trial. Of H.L. Hunt, Fensterwald and company write as follows. The name of H.L. Hunt, the late Texas oil billionaire, has often been mentioned in regard to several areas of information surrounding the assassination. Hunt, who was perhaps the richest man in the United States, was a key financier and sponsor of various right-wing political activities during the early 1960s, and was the head of a business empire noted for both its toughness and important political connections. Hunt was also a bitter critic of President Kennedy and his brother Robert. The Warren Commission noted that many rumors and allegations had arisen following the assassination concerning the possible involvement of H.L. Hunt and other Texas oil men, and that the name of H.L. Hunt's son, Lamar Hunt, had been found in a notebook belonging to Jack Ruby. The commission also established that on the day before the assassination, Jack Ruby had, quote, visited with a young lady who was job hunting in Dallas, unquote, and had driven the woman around in her search for employment that day. The woman, Connie Trammell, T-R-A-M-M-E-L, had become friends with Ruby several weeks earlier. The Warren Report didn't mention where Ruby drove Trammell on November 21, 1963, but an FBI interview report did, to the office of Lamar Hunt at the H.L. Hunt headquarters in Dallas. Ruby's visit to the H.L. Hunt offices on the afternoon before the assassination occurred at roughly the same time that Mafia figure Jim Braden, B-R-A-D-E-N, was visiting there. Strong possibilities exist of Braden connections to both Jack Ruby and David Ferry in the days and weeks immediately preceding the assassination. So again, note that obviously Jack Ruby had bumped or had crossed paths with the Hunt family in Texas. And again, bear in mind that Nelson Bunker Hunt helped to finance the black-bordered ad that appeared in the Dallas Morning News on November 22, 1963, accusing President Kennedy of treason. More about the Hunt political empire and its connections, skipping down in Fensterwald's book. When the Drew Pearson Diaries from 1949 to 1959 were published in 1974, by the way, Drew Pearson was an American political columnist. He was succeeded by Jack Anderson, his protege. Beginning again, when the Drew Pearson Diaries from 1949 to 1959 were published in 1974, an allegation about H.L. Hunt's possible financing of an earlier vice presidential candidate also surfaced. According to the entry for October 29th, 1952, an associate of Pearson had telephoned me from Texas, to tell me about a conspiracy which began about 2 years ago by H.L. Hunt, the big oil man, and a publicity firm called Watson Associates to put Nixon into the vice presidency. He claims an untold amount of oil money had been behind Nixon for some time, and that all this was put over on Eisenhower without his knowing it. Later, some calls to Texas indicated the story is probably true. In 1968, prior to Wallace's selection of General Curtis LeMay as his third-party running mate, H.L. Hunt had apparently lobbied on behalf of another vice presidential prospect for Nixon's Republican ticket. According to the Texas Observer of August 23, 1968, the oil billionaire had personally buttonholed various party officials at the Republican convention in Miami to recommend a favorite conservative congressman as Richard Nixon's running mate, Representative Gerald R. Ford. Now, of course, later Gerald Ford, a key Warren Commission member, succeeded Richard Nixon after Spiro Agnew was forced to resign as vice president during the Watergate scandal. We took a look at Nixon's probable involvement in the Kennedy assassination in the Guns of November Part 3, and a major addendum to that from June of 1992. So we note that H.L. Hunt, in addition to being quite possibly a driving force behind getting Richard Nixon to be Eisenhower's vice president, was also lobbying Nixon to have Gerald Ford as his vice president in 1968. Bear in mind, it was President Gerald Ford who appointed George Bush, director of Central Intelligence, as congressional investigations into the Kennedy assassination were beginning. By the way, also take note of Jim Braden. Jim Braden, who also was in Dallas to visit with the Hunt family, and who may very well have been connected with both Ruby and David Ferry, Jim Braden was arrested in Dallas, Texas, in the Dow Tex building across the street from the Texas School Book Depository on November 22, 1963. More about the Hunt family and the context in which their names crop up in connection with the investigation into the assassination, not necessarily the assassination itself, although I personally think they probably were involved. We're going to begin reading now from High Treason, subtitled The Assassination of President John F. Kennedy, What Really Happened, by Robert J. Groden, G-R-O-D-E-N, and Harrison Edward Livingston. This was published in softcover by the Conservatory Press of New York and Baltimore, Maryland, and it was copyrighted in paperback in 1989. And of the Hunt family, and more of their connections, we read from this particular book, quote, Hunt is the big man in Texas, the giant, the richest and the stingiest, the most powerful and the most solitary of the oil men. The opinions and the aversions of obstinate old men often lead to excesses. Embittered Puritan potentates frightened to see their lives drawing to an end are in even greater danger. In the streets of Texas, knock out the Kennedy stickers were already appearing on bumpers and windshields, unquote. The book from which these quotes are taken, Farewell America, was supposedly written by a, quote, James Hepburn, unquote, or, quote, pseudonym actual author or authors unknown, unquote, published in Europe, and traced to the presidential palace and French intelligence by Bill Turner, T-U-R-N-E-R, a former FBI man who has worked hard in this investigation. In it, we find that, quote, at 12:23 on November 22nd, from his office on the seventh floor of the Mercantile Building, Haroldson Lafayette Hunt watched John Kennedy ride towards Dealey Plaza, where fate awaited him at 12:30. A few minutes later, escorted by six men in two cars, Hunt left the center of Dallas without even stopping by his house. At that very moment, General Walker was in a plane between New Orleans and Shreveport. He joined Mr. Hunt in one of his secret hideaways across the Mexican border. There, they remained for a month, protected by personal guards under the impassive eyes of the FBI. It was not until Christmas that Hunt, Walker, and their party returned to Dallas, unquote. General Walker's aide, Robert Surrey, S-U-R-R-E-Y, told the Midlothian Mirror that he played bridge regularly with James Hostey, the FBI man who had been to see the Oswalds and who destroyed a note written to him by Oswald. At the same time, Oswald was seen attending meetings at which General Walker was present or spoke after he was alleged to have shot at Walker. One meeting was held to raise money for the DRE, a Cuban anti-Castro group. Walker's address and phone number were in Oswald's address book. Skipping down, there is extensive evidence that Jack Ruby was involved in supplying arms to the Cubans and also knew Walker. William McEwen Duff, M-C capital E-W-A-N capital D-U-F-F, who worked for Walker, says he saw Ruby go to Walker's house. By the way, one thing, I may be wrong, although certainly there are considerable degrees of intersection between the DeGolyer-McNaughton milieu that we looked at earlier and the Hunt. It may be the Mercantile National Bank that was the Hunt Bank, not the Republican National Bank, so there may be a slight amendment to that. I'm going to have to go double-check it. I think Republic National Bank was Hunt. That may be an incorrect fact. I may have the a mnemonic error under the circumstances, but certainly there are considerable degrees of intersection between the Galen Intelligence Petroleum milieu and the Hunt operations, and bear in mind that former DeGolyer and McNaughton employee and an individual who, along with Lewis McNaughton, was a trustee of the Empire Trust Company, the Loeb, Lehman, Bronfman Company, which had its own private CIA, Jack Crichton, who selected Mamontov and Peter Gregory as Marina's interpreters after the assassination, was director of the H.L. Hunt Foundation. But as we've seen, Ruby went to the Hunt offices to bring Connie Trammell to a job interview. Jim Braden was also in Dallas, allegedly to visit Lamar Hunt. We've seen that certainly, as we took a look at, Lee Harvey Oswald had attended a meeting that was being held by the U.S. Day rally that H.L. Hunt protege General Edwin Walker had held. And there are also indications, certainly Oswald had, and this is interesting too, because this attending of the meeting was after Oswald had supposedly tried to kill Edwin Walker. Note also that, at least according to William McEwen Duff, who worked for General Edwin Walker, Jack Ruby also knew Edwin Walker. Now, this is worth taking note of, because supposedly these are all unconnected events and unconnected people. There are no hookups, supposedly, between Jack Ruby and Lee Harvey Oswald. As we looked at some weeks back, the telephone company had records of calls between Ruby and Oswald. Supposedly, there are no connections between any of these people. But, in fact, obviously, there were many, many connections between these people, thus indicating the milieu that was involved in killing President Kennedy. I would note, too, that H.L. Hunt, in the early 1950s, was a protege, or worked very closely with a fellow named Gerald L.K. Smith. Gerald L.K. Smith was a person we looked at considerable length in Radio Free America programs 10 through 13, particularly number 10. Gerald L.K. Smith was an American fascist. His Christian mobilizers and their publication, The Cross and the Flag, not only worked directly with Third Reich intelligence representatives in the United States, namely two people who operated out of the German embassy in Washington named von Geinath, G-E-I-N-A-T-H, and Hans Luther, L-U-T-H-E-R, but Gerald L.K. Smith was also financed by American industrialist Henry Ford, who also helped to finance Adolf Hitler, and whose industrial empire, or the European branch of which, was deeply involved with helping to arm the Third Reich. After the war, Gerald L.K. Smith was instrumental in giving rise to the contemporary Aryan Nations. His protege, Wesley Swift, founded the Christian Nationalist Party. Actually, I guess L.K. Smith founded the Christian Nationalist Party. He was succeeded in that regard by Wesley Swift and two of Wesley Swift's associates named William Potter Gale and Richard Gernt Butler became in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s key figures with the Aryan Nations. Butler still is today. William Potter Gale has since passed away. But we're going to take a look now at how this Native American fascist milieu, this Hunt, Edwin Walker, and bear in mind that Edwin Walker was a protege of H.L. Hunt. We're going to take a look at this Hunt, Walker, John Birch Society milieu, and how it hooks up with this petroleum intelligence Galen milieu that we've been looking at. And bear in mind that Jack Alston Crichton, also an Army Reserve intelligence officer, was a trustee of the H.L. Hunt Foundation. Returning again to government documents in the JFK assassination, Nelson Bunker Hunt, meanwhile, had become the Texas representative of a German-based intelligence network, the ICDCC, or International Committee for the Defense of Christian Culture, which paradoxically united many of the CIA's most prominent opponents within the United States, most notably China lobbyist General Charles Willoughby, W-I-L-L-O-U-G-H-B-Y, General MacArthur's former G2 in Japan and Korea, with representatives from CIA-sponsored organizations abroad, such as the Ukrainians cultivated by the Galen Organization. One chairman of the ICDCC, Hermann Punder, P-U-N-D-E-R, with an umlaut over the U, was a former Abwehr agent and close ally of Galen sponsors Konrad Adenauer and Hermann Obst of the Deutsche Bank, while a later chairman, Theodor Oberländer, was close to the right-wing German emigre group to whose newspaper General Walker spoke by long-distance telephone on November 22, 1963, transmitting the story, accepted by the Warren Report, that Oswald had shot at Walker in April of 1963. The ICDCC also appears to have been particularly concerned about the future of Vietnam. Thus, Oberländer represented the ICDCC at the 1966 conference of the Asian People's Anti-Communist League, a pro-Diem group, along with several of Diem's original backers in the United States, notably Father Raymond D. Yeager, J-E-E-G-H-E-R, of the Free Pacific Association, and such other luminaries as Tom Charles Houston, H-U-S-T-O-N, then the Secretary General of Marvin Liebman's World Youth Crusade for Freedom, and later, after a two-year stint in Army intelligence, the author of the White House Houston Plan. The ICDCC and Willoughby's allied Foreign Intelligence Digest united many of the American opponents of Kennedy whose names we have encountered already. Among these were Walker's friend Billy James Hargis of the Christian Crusade, Diem's patron Father Raymond de Yeager, and Revelo Oliver's intelligence source, Frank Capel. Oliver, Revelo Oliver's R-E-V-I-L-O, capital O-L-I-V-E-R, Capel is capital C-A-P-E-L-L, Revelo Oliver, a key John Bircher. Continuing, these men, like Willoughby himself, were close to Army intelligence rather than the CIA. But the ICDCC also included José Ignacio Rasco, R-A-S-C-O, the Cuban emigre secretary general of the MDC, which, as we have seen, was part of the CIA-DIA Manuel Artime Nicaraguan invasion scheme, and to that end had established a training camp on Lake Pontchartrain near New Orleans. So now, taking a look here at what we've seen, Nelson Bunker Hunt, again, who helped pay for the black-bordered ad accusing President Kennedy of treason that appeared in the Dallas Morning News of 11-22-63, he is the Texas representative of a German-based intelligence network, the ICDCC. Among the key members of this are former General Charles Willoughby, who was in charge of Douglas MacArthur's military intelligence for a long period of time, ranging from just before World War II through the Korean War. In our Aryan Nation series, we took a look at Charles Willoughby, named Karl Adolf von Zschäpe und Wiedenbach, a German-born fascist whose political idol was Francisco Franco. After his retirement from the military, Charles Willoughby became an advisor to Franco, the fascist dictator of Spain, whose rise to power during the Spanish Civil War was actively aided by Hitler and Mussolini. And we took a look at how also Willoughby brought Franco to the United States to lecture at West Point. We'll also take a look here and take the note of the fact that this particular German-based intelligence network intersects very deeply with the Galen anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations milieu, which we are focusing on this evening. Note that one of the former chairmen of the ICDCC was Hermann Punder. Now, Hermann Punder, of course, or as explained here, was a former Abwehr agent and very close to Galen's, that's Reinhard Galen's supporters, Konrad Adenauer, and Hermann Obst of the Deutsche Bank. Now, Hermann Obst was a member of the board of directors of IG Farben, the Nazi chemical cartel, was one of the most important financiers of the Third Reich, and an individual whose influence extends well through the post-World War II period. By the way, he was called in by Pope John Paul I to help straighten out the Vatican banking mess. And take note of something we covered in Radio Free America number 2, that Konrad Adenauer, despite his alleged anti-Nazi sympathies, was in fact deeply involved with the Third Reich, though not a member of the Nazi Party himself. Adenauer and Hermann Obst helped to sponsor Reinhard Galen. Take note also of Theodor Oberlander, O-B-E-R-L-A-E-N-D-E-R. He was a key SS officer and also an individual who was the liaison, or one of the key liaison people, between Reinhard Galen's Fremde Heere Ost, or Foreign Armies East, and the Vlasov Liberation Army, the Russian turncoats who fought on behalf of the Third Reich. Elements of the Vlasov Army then jumped to the CIA and U.S. intelligence with the Galen organization. We're going to take a look at Theodor Oberlander and some of his interesting connections later on in the program. Now, take a look, note briefly that Theodor Oberlander, in addition to being a key member of the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations, Theodor Oberlander was also the commander of the Einsatzgruppe Nachtigall. That was one of the Einsatzgruppe and the mobile killing squads which followed the Third Reich's frontline troops into the former Soviet Union and performed many of the liquidations of Jews, Gypsies, Communists, and other people that they sought to get rid of. The Einsatzgruppe Nachtigall liquidated the Jewish population of the city of Lvov, or Lemberg, as it was called when it was part of Poland. And that particular Einsatzgruppe, and the Nachtigall, commanded by Theodor Oberlander, as we looked at in Radio Free America 14, was composed almost entirely of Ukrainian fascists affiliated with the OUN-UPA, also a key element of the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations and the World Anti-Communist League. The main patron, the main element, the main figure, I should say, involved with the OUN-UPA was a fellow named Stefan Bandera, B-A-N-D-E-R-A. Remember the name Stefan Bandera, a person we looked at in both RFAs 14 and 15, because we're going to come back to Stefan Bandera later in the program. And also bear in mind something that I cited last week, the Warren Commission Council, who was in charge with investigating the White Russian and the Russian connections, the Galen-ABN connections, to the milieu of Lee Harvey Oswald, and they were pivotal, as we've seen. This was a fellow named Wesley Liebler, L-I-E-B-L-E-R, who was an attorney with Carter, Ledyard, and Milburn, one of the main American foreign policy law firms. It's interesting to observe, quote, networking in this regard, because the fellow who was instrumental in bringing many of the OUN-UPA Bandera people to the United States, and we looked at this in Radio Free America number 1, so that the former Galen people could work with Galen in the CIA, was none other than a former Deputy Director of Central Intelligence, Frank Wisner, of the Office of Policy Coordination, last name W-I-S-N-E-R. Now, Wisner had been a senior partner with Carter, Ledyard, and Milburn at the same time that William Harding Jackson, another Deputy Director of Central Intelligence at the same time, was also a senior Carter, Ledyard, and Milburn partner. And Wesley Liebler, in charge with investigating the White Russian connections to the assassination, was also an attorney with Carter, Ledyard, and Milburn. Obviously, Wesley Liebler was less than successful in penetrating the significance of all of these connections. And bear in mind, too, something I cited last week. People react very stupidly and instinctively when they hear the word conspiracy. People say, oh, I don't believe in conspiracy theories. Try a different word. Try networking, because that's really what we're looking at. And again, I refer people to the book The Old Boys by Burton Hirsch, last name H-E-R-S-H, which deals with the intersection between the Wall Street elite and the CIA and how this, quote, networking operates. People hear the word conspiracy and they get stupid, but when people hear the word networking, they go, oh, networking. Oh, you mean like what yuppies do? You mean like what I do? Why, yes, how nice. Much more intelligent word than conspiracy, much more revealing, and I think much more useful for our purposes under the circumstances in investigating the, quote, networking, unquote, which was very important to understanding the truth concerning the assassination of President Kennedy. We're going to take a musical break now, and then we're going to come back with more of Radio Free America program number 37, How the United States Lost the Second World War.